This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at REACH 2017, held on March 23 and 24, 2017, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
One of the real difficulties of teaching public speaking is that you're doing public speaking while you're trying to teach it. So I have evaluated and graded Keyshawn to the point of harassment at some points. Now it's his turn. So please do recognize the vulnerability that I'm in here. I'll get right into it. When you're thinking about making a content or making content that makes a difference, when you're thinking about making content that makes a difference in the world, you're going to have to take the long view. And this is worth me talking about a little bit. What do I mean by taking the long view? Well, the Appalachian Trail, it's the nation's longest footpath. It's 2,175 miles long. And every year, over 1,000 people, they decide they're going to through hike. They're going to go all the way from the start, which begins down in Georgia, and go all the way up to Maine. That's 14 states that you're going to hike through. They're through hikers. There's 1,000 of them that decide they're going to do this every year. And typically by the end of the year, about 300 people make it. Okay? 30% success. As you go along the Appalachian Trail at its full length, you have to think ahead. You have to send supplies ahead of yourself, and even going to the extreme sometimes of persuading or manipulating your friends and saying, say, at this date, would you mail to this post office? I'm going to be there. I need these supplies to pick up. Could you do that for me, please? And then they do that. You arrive at the post office. The supplies arrive there, too. If it's working right, you can pick them up and continue to through hike. It takes that kind of forethought to successfully hike the Appalachian Trail. Notwithstanding, you've got to be in good physical shape. You've got to have the long view in mind if you want to hike the Appalachian Trail. And you, when you start thinking about content, when you start thinking about content that makes a difference, you similarly have to have the long view in mind. So, when I think about ministries, this is what I mean. When a ministry gets started, there's a lot of passion, there's a lot of excitement, and you tend to focus very quickly and very appropriately on launching programs, on getting events going, on facilitating things, on being engaged with people. And this is something that needs to happen immediately. Of course, you've got to meet needs if you're going to be doing ministry work. And it's fairly easy, because as you're launching, as you're going, as you're beginning, the hardworking staff that you have tend to be visionary people. They believe in what you're doing. They care about it. And they work really hard. You could see one man who's carrying the vision, the founder of a certain ministry. He can do the work of 10, right? And they do. They frequently do. But what tends to happen as that founding energy can wane, or as it's passed on from generation to generation, if there isn't thought given to the long view, you can't be sustained, okay? You can't be sustained forever on that founding vision. You have to think about ways of taking the long view, of embedding that vision into the practices of what your ministry's like. So you have to think about what it's going to take to sustain it. And I mean that in very practical terms, okay? When you think about communications, when you think about the way you make your content, ask yourself questions like, is there a budget for this? Do we actually put aside budget for this? Do we have staff whose job is to cultivate good content in our organization? Or do we just kind of let it happen? Another question is, do you have a plan? If you don't have a plan, I'm saying you're not taking the long view. Okay? So if you want to make content that makes a difference, effective, faithful, life-giving, motivating content, take the long view. And it's worth saying here, it's worth saying that a lot of our ministries are moving, making this difficult transition from first generation, founding vision, to second generation. Okay? This is the time when that sustainability needs to begin to thoughtfully, deliberately, intentionally be built in, or you can expect that handoff to fumble. Now, I hope to do for you two things. in this breakout. The first is that I want to give you an appreciation for the long view, right? And it's necessity. And then with that appreciation, I want to actually give you some tools to work with. So I say take the long view, but I want to say also, well, and here's how you do it. And that's going to happen in two phases. First, we're going to explore three foundational principles of effective content. And then we're going to outline a content generation process. And this is going to be like drinking from a fire hose by the time we get to that point. I am going to move fast. And my idea there isn't so much to just bombard you. You might gloss over. Just get down the ideas that are actually significant for you and filter out what I'm talking. But first, three considerations that I think you have to consider. If you want to make effective content, you're going to have to consider these three foundational principles. And those principles are outcome, objective, and once it comes, relevance. And when you take all of these three together, you're going to get what I would call prepared content. Okay? Content that has buried into it a foundationally long view perspective of what content is, because this doesn't happen by accident. And these considerations are true regardless of what medium you're using. This is true of public speaking. Okay? If you have these principles of objective and relevance outcome built in, it's more likely you'll be effective as a public speaker. It's built into newsletters. It's built into websites. It's built into videos. You're going to see these principles anywhere there's effective content being given. Another thing to note about these is that even though I'm breaking these apart and saying you can consider them separately for the sake of clarity, in real life, when you actually see these in prepared content, they're happening simultaneously. So I'm putting it on the exam table, I'm pulling it apart, and it's dead, okay? But when you put it all together is when you actually have effective content. So let's dig in. And the way I'm going to do this is to use an object lesson or to illustrate it from a book which I'd recommend. It's Made to Stick. And it's an illustration borrowed from Texas, which had a serious littering problem. Okay, so I'm going to read this, and you're going to find me evaluating and drawing from this object, or from this anti-littering campaign that Texas did, which ended up being very successful. In the 1980s, this organization was hired by the state of Texas, which had a serious littering problem. The state was spending $25 million per year on cleanup, and costs were rising 15% per year. The standard anti-littering message is emotional, but it tends to focus on a limited set of emotions. There are appeals to guilt and shame, as in a spot which shows a Native American shedding a tear, or a cuddly wildlife, which says things like, give a hoot, don't pollute. Now, this organization doing the campaign knew that that kind of appeal would not work for Texans. So they built a profile of a typical litterer in Texas who was 18 to 35 years old, pickup driving, male who liked sports and country music. Okay? He didn't like authority, and he didn't really care about cuddly owls. Designing an anti-litter campaign based on self-interest wasn't likely to work with this group. After all, what do bubbas really have to gain by not littering? It goes on, the best way to change his behavior, bubba's behavior, which is who this profile was, this 18 to 35-year-old, was to convince him that people like him, people like bubba, don't litter. Okay? One of the earliest TV commercials featured two Texas Cowboy players who were famous. Defensive end Tootall Jones and tackle Randy White. They were picking up trash. Tootall Jones steps up to the camera and says, you see the guy who threw this out the window? You tell him I got a message for him. Randy White steps forward to the beer can and says, I got a message for him too. White crushes the can with his fist and says threateningly, well, I kind of need to see him to deliver it. Two Tall Jones ads, don't mess with Texas. And they go on describing these various ads along similar lines. Very subtle stuff, right? But it worked. It was an astonishing success. Within a month of the campaign, an astonishing 73% of Texans polled could recall the message and identify with its anti-littering camp message. Within 1 year, litter had declined 29%. Okay? And they abandoned a separate $1 million enforcement program, in which police would be pulling people over, because it became unnecessary. In the coming years, Texas trash and litter declined 72%. Okay? So you go 72% reduction because of an effective $20 million campaign. That's effective content. Okay? How did that happen? The best way to start defining, to start working with content, is to begin at the end. Okay? The best way is to begin at the end. You start by defining your expected outcome. Ask yourself, what do you want to accomplish with this? What is the insight, action, or decision that you want to move your audience toward? What will be the new state of things, the new rearrangement of things needed for you to consider your newsletter or your website or your blog post successful? The goal here is to give you some kind of target to aim at, something to move toward. If you don't have some kind of picture of what it is you're going to move toward, then any goal is going to do. And when we have no goal to move toward, and if any goal is going to do, these unconscious goals begin to take over. And the problem with these unconscious goals is that they tend to be the wrong ones. So in the Texas anti-littering campaign, the outcome was what? Well, it's to convince Bubba that people like him do not litter. How would you go about measuring if that outcome was a good one? And there's three traits I'll identify here to help you identify whether the outcomes you're defining are good ones. The qualities of a good outcome will be, first, specific. A good outcome will be specific. Things like Texans will change one attitude about their littering habits, or we will reduce the amount of litter along our roads. That's a specific outcome. A second characteristic. A good outcome will be actionable. Texans can easily identify with the spokesperson we choose, you say, or it's within the power of Texans to stop littering. We've given them trash cans already. They have to use them. It's within their power. They have that capacity, and we're speaking to it. It has to be actionable. And last, if you're making a good outcome, it's going to be verifiable. You can verify it. When asked whether Texans litter, they will respond, no, Texans do not litter. Or there will be less trash along Texas roads. That's a simple one, right? You can measure it. You can verify, did it happen, did it not happen? If you can't measure your outcome, it's not a good outcome. Okay? And then, with that desired outcome in mind, you just set about giving the audience the tools that they need to move one step closer to that outcome, to gain a little bit of traction with them, to get them a little bit further in that direction. When you set an outcome in place, I'm suggesting here that you've done a lot of the hard work. Once that outcome's there, you just need to give them the tools and the content they need to move that direction. So to summarize it, effective communication begins by setting in place some vision of the expected outcome. Next, objective. A little fuzzy, sorry about that. Now, I do work for Faith Builders, and don't turn off the lights, please.
Thank you.
Our summer and winter term brochures, we renovated them just recently, and they were in need of a renovation. They had a problem. People were giving us defective information on the forms. They were confused. They didn't seem to understand how the form was supposed to work, and because of that, they didn't give us the information we needed. We could have given our users a hard time about that. This is clear. Look, you're trying to apply for a term to help the classes you need. Here's a list of expenses. Send the application here. It's all right there. How could you miss it, guys? We could, and you know, your office can begin to do that. You won't tell them that, but you can begin to do that back in there. That's the feeling you get. It's a user problem, right? But the reality is, no. There were some defects here that we really had to do. The failure of our forms was that we'd forgotten what the user was trying to accomplish. They were trying to apply for a term, right? And that's all this form had to do. But instead, we're giving them all this helpful information about expenses and where to mail this and a calendar and housing and all this stuff, right? It's good stuff. They need to know it, but they don't need to know it now. What they're trying to do, what their objective is help me to apply for a term. And we're telling them housing options. We're giving them pricing. And they just want to apply. We've already got them that far. So we reworked it. And now it looks something like this. No, it's not perfect, but I do think it's an improvement. It has an objective. It has a focus. It has a certain goal to it. And we're trying to work with our audience, knowing that their objective is to apply for a term. Why make it hard for them? And that's what this form does. So as you prepare your content for publication, ask yourself, what is the objective of this publication? What is it going to accomplish? Are you going to inform people? Are you going to equip them or enable them? Are you going to convince them to do something? What's it going to do? I'm going to have to skip a little bit here. So if in your handout you're skipping something, it's not your problem. Okay. No, not too bad. So effective content, to summarize this, will have one overarching goal. It'll have one objective around which the entire presentation aligns. Your objective is it's your message in one phrase. It's your thesis. It's the sun around which the solar system of your entire presentation, your entire content presentation, lines up and goes into orbit. So ask yourself, what are you trying to do with this? Last, relevance. And here, I'd like to do a little exercise with you all. You're going to swap hats. You are now administrators, all of you are administrators, of a K through 12 grade school. And you're bringing your juniors and seniors to Reach. And you're going to send an announcement to all of the student body about this coming event. And here are the details about that. You have this in your handout, I believe. Yes. The executive team of Calvary Hill. Anybody here have a school by that name? Okay, I'm safe. Calvary Hill. The executive team of Calvary Hill, under direction of the board, announced today that the juniors and seniors will travel to Lancaster for Reach, a convention of conservative Anabaptist ministries, next Friday. Among the speakers at the convention are Richie Lauer, Brian Martin, and Amos Esch. Your job is to craft an email announcement to the student body about this coming event. And your job specifically is to craft just the subject line of this email. So it'll be under 60 characters. Make it as relevant to your audience, the students, as possible. Everybody ready? Going to be crafting the subject line. You have a minute and a half. Go. Let me hear some. What do you get? Relevant topics for relevant subject lines for your emails.
Opportunity to reach beyond your horizons.
Very good.
Reach underlined in bold.
Okay. Clever. Yes. Anybody else?
thinking of K through 12, I figured the word field trip would connect to
it. Oh, good.
So, take the field trip of a lifetime.
I like the line this is following. Okay, anybody else want to build on that?
Okay, here's senior field trip Friday to Leinster.
Okay, good. What do students care about?
Day off school.
Day off school. Okay, that's what I'm actually looking for here. No school on Friday, right? And again, I'm sacrificing a lot of things there just to say, for the sake of relevance, to appeal to that audience, what are they going to care about right then? There's no school on Friday, okay? And all I'm really getting at with that little exercise, there could be a lot of right answers, right? But the point I'm making is that relevance, here, pay attention to your handout a little bit, relevance is bringing your message to bear in a way that your audience understands, is attracted to, and can act on. Or that effective communication and effective content is going to be relevant to the tastes, needs, and situation of the audience. It will address the questions that the audience or any audience is going to bring to your presentation. Questions like, why should I care? What's at stake? What could be gained or lost? And why does it matter? And if you demonstrate good answers to those sorts of questions in your content, then you're offering to your audience relevant content. For Texans, relevant content does not involve weepy Native Americans, right? That's stuff for Southern California. For Texans, you need things like the Houston Astros pitcher Mike Scott throwing his split-fingered trash ball into an exploding trash can of fire. That's relevant to Texans, apparently. It found the Texas litter bugs where they were. It answered their questions, and it made a difference to them because it was relevant. You're all ready for the deluge? Okay. So now you've got these three principles to work at as you think about making content that makes a difference. And this gives you some ability to gauge the effectiveness of your content. It gives you a measure to work with and a foundation to work from. But let's get practical. How will you make this content? I said it before, but this content doesn't just appear magically. Good content, effective content, doesn't just happen by accident. You have to plan for it. You've got to put processes in place. What are those processes like? I think these could be more or less in order. I don't think they're universal. Okay, I'm pushing especially on what I've learned, and at Faith Builders, that this is my job as communications coordinator or director. I have a luxury there. Not every organization has this. But I think this does illustrate a process that's at least helpful for everybody. And the first part of this process is to identify audiences. Who are you talking to? Are these people apathetic or motivated? Are they informed or uninformed? Are they hostile or are they friendly? Are they invested and committed, or are they just kind of vaguely interested in what you're doing? And when you identify your audience and you've answered some of those questions, it helps you begin to form a relevant message for them. It helps you begin to form content that's actually going to appeal to these questions and answer the questions that they bring to you. So identify your audience. Second, identify your channels. And by channels, I just mean, how are you getting this message out? What are your messaging platforms? What are you pushing your content through? You might want to think about online channels, like your website. Think about blogs and forums, your archives of content that you've made before. Where do your newsletters go to live after they've been published? That promotional video that you invested a lot of time in, where is it? Where does it live? How is that on the web and how do people access it? We found ourselves that as you think about online presence, more and more people are using our website to register for our events, like Reach. Okay? Paper forms are tending to fall by the wayside. So we have to think for ourselves about how our online presence is having an objective in mind. How do we make this experience very easy for people to use our website? Because that's where they're tending to go more and more. Think about social media, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, LinkedIn, Pinterest, Google+. And here's a ranking of them. This is going to depend on what sector you're in, on what audiences you're appealing to, but that's a general rule of thumb. This is what a lot of nonprofits are finding to be effective messaging platforms for them. And this is true in my experience as well. Sorry, Google. Right. They tried so hard. Pay attention to social media. And last, when you're thinking about your online presence, think about email. It's not dead yet. Okay? We found that even though social media generates an enormous amount of shares and likes, for whatever reason, with our audiences, there's still something about an email appeal that actually drives people to action. So if you pay attention to our emails, they tend to be less informative and more action-oriented because that's where people go to take an action for whatever reason. So we send our actions out via email. We put a lot more content about feel and the ambience of, say, Faith Builders through social media, newsletters, and other platform entirely. Print is a channel, and again, this isn't a dead one. Think about your catalogs, your newsletters, your line cards, your pamphlets, brochures, postcards, your forms. You can evaluate all of these using those three principles. Think about the content that's presented in person, because there's just no substitute for actually having personal presence. Choir programs, presentations, open houses, seminars. Take your programs to the people you serve. Don't just wait for them to come to you. On the air. You could forget about this one, right? But Heralds of Hope still runs an entire organization and a very widely networked-in mission over the air. It gives them access to places that they could not access through any other means otherwise. Don't forget about the airways. It might be something you'd consider. Think about mobile people. I said that a lot of people access our website to take an action of some kind, to apply for a term, to come to Reach. 1/3 of those people do so on a mobile device. So not only do you have to think about how appealing your website is to these people, but you have to think, how does it look on the tiny little screen of an iPhone? This matters if you've got 1/3 of your people coming, right? So think about that. I do suggest, as you think in general about all of these various channels for communication, do identify one of these, which will be the hub of your communication. It's more general purpose. It's got the space you need to kind of solicit from, to make appeals from, to gain the broadest audience that you can. For us, this continues to be our paper newsletter. Find one that's the center of it. It could be your website, okay? And again, this is going to depend on your audience. It's going to depend on who you are and what your mission is. But do find one place that'll be your hub. So, you've got audiences, you've got channels. Next, think about the rules that people will take. R-O-L-E-S, rules. Maybe put one person in place as the coordinator. Okay. This is the big picture strategist who coordinates and administrates with the other executive staff. So this is the person who proposes a plan and then executes on that plan to make the content. So he's responsible for producing the content, ensuring that that content has a high level of quality, and then making sure that it reaches the right audiences at the right times. And there's other things that this person would do. This is my job. I know a little something about it. It's a fun job. It's also very frustrating sometimes. Okay, so you have to delegate, though, somebody who's going to be at the center of it, the coordinator. Second, contributors. These are people who receive direction and guidance or pressure. I said frustrating sometimes. They receive guidance or pressure from the coordinator. This person is going to fulfill the assignments that the coordinator assigns to them. To get it down to the nuts and bolts a little bit more, contributors could be administrative people, they could be the board, they could be staff writers, could be a journalist. And this is one position that we created a little while ago at FaithBuilders that's been really effective for us. A person whose only job is with coordination with the coordinator, again, to seek out stories, to find pictures, to get content, to get interviews. If you pay attention to our Facebook feed, you're going to see a lot of the work of the journalist. That's their job. They just get little windows in. They work angles. The journalist. Another contributor could be your photographer or photographers, depending how widely distributed you are. This person has the tools and training that they need to capture images for these various channels that you have. Could be video. You may want to maintain a photo library with times and kind of organized by date, organized by event, so that you have a repository to pull from. Whatever you do, you don't want to always be behind with generating pictures. Another role, the designer, takes the products of the content producers, the writers, the photo makers, and lays them out in a way that's pleasing and compelling, that's direct, that can have influence, and is also beautifully done. You need, fourth, an editor. This person is responsible for catching typos, for suggesting where the text could be clearer, and snagging any layout issues that the designer and that the coordinator might have missed. This is your watchdog. And last, think about the stakeholders. By stakeholders here, I mean these are the people, and they're usually administrative, who, this is one negative example, would have to bear the fallout if you did something wrong as a content generator, as a coordinator. These are the people who have an interest in what you're doing because it influences how their programs are going to work out or what kind of feedback they're going to get because of your work. So identify your stakeholders. Who are they? And give them a chance to look at your work before it goes out. Give them a chance to give feedback before you even begin planning. Okay? Give them a proposal. What do you think? Invite their feedback. Fourth, identify sources. And you're going to find maybe a little bit of overlap here between what I was talking about with contributors. Talk about your events. Do reporting on your events. What went well? What were the outcomes? What disappointed you? Give announcements. What's coming next? What should we anticipate? What are you planning for? The point here being that if all of you're doing is reporting on things that happened in the past, it begins to give an image of your organization that's always reactive. Okay? You want to get the impression that you're taking initiative. You're acting with something clear in mind. You're moving towards something. You're not just acting responsively or reactively. So as you make your content, do reporting by all means, but also anticipate and make announcements. Another content source, programs. These are big, large-scale or kind of strategic shifts. Events only dangle from programs. Okay? Events dangle from programs. So you're starting a new work in Nigeria, say. Talk about what's motivating this. And second, what events or activities will come from this. You're hearing there, too, a little plug for strategic content, stuff that's not just focused on the behaviors of your organization or their activities, but what's the goal? What's behind us? What's compelling about it for you? Talk to the people themselves, and I've mentioned some of these folks. It's worth saying again, talk to the board, the executive team, administrators. Talk to staff. Talk to volunteers. Ask them what's compelling, what's motivating them. And as you talk to your volunteers, I'd suggest give them direction. Okay? Don't just give them an open-ended question. Say, write something for our newsletter. Say, answer these three questions. Okay? And then give them some space to work with. Then give it to your editor and give them feedback. This can be a learning experience for your volunteers, too. Talk to, third, those you serve. And these people tend to be willing to contribute. You have a mission. You're trying to serve people. Ask them questions. Guide them through the process. Don't hold them up like some kind of trophy, of course. That's not what you're about. But do get feedback from them. Let them contribute. They tend to be eager to do that. And a last source of content. As you're looking at sources, look around you. Look at other people's newsletters. Look at other people's blogs. And you're thinking about economy here a little bit, because making all original content after a while is exhausting work. So look around and ask other people, too. Hey, that was a great newsletter article. Do you mind if we reprinted that? And they tend to be willing to do that. It's a great way to build camaraderie and to give somebody else a little lift, too. So I'd encourage you to consider that. You've got audiences, channels, rules, sources. You have now arrived at the time to make content. Remember the three principles, right? Objective, outcome, relevance. Remember that. And then make content. And make it like this. Ask for interviews. Ask for interviews with people within your organization and without. I found that people tend to get really excited. And they begin to get excited in a way that if you just ask them, say, write 500 words for the newsletter, go get it. That's not really great, and especially for administrative sorts of people. They don't enjoy that. So if you do ask somebody to contribute, why not interview them? And then do some writing yourself. It helps improve you as a writer, but also gives them the chance to talk about something they're passionate about. Ask, second, for guest articles. Third, evaluate challenges, opportunities, trends that you're seeing within the field where you serve. Fourth, revisit your mission. Why do you exist? And again, getting away from just saying, don't just talk about activities. Do talk about activities, but in your talking about them, always give the context of why you're doing them. Why does it matter? Why is this significant? Okay? Don't take that for granted. Fifth, write about the daily grind. What goes into the daily operations behind the scenes? What does a volunteer experience every day? Draw attention to the support ministries that need to be in place behind the scenes to make the big picture move actually work. Six, announce news. New staff, new programs, construction projects, publications. Seven, report on your supporters. We tend to be pretty modest here, for good reasons. But who supports you? And why do they support you? Have you noticed any trends within the groups of people who support you? And what could you say about them that lets you know that you appreciate them? What do you enjoy about your supporters? Eight, say thank you. Let these supporters know that they make this possible, and let people know what supporters make possible. Let them know the outcomes that as they're contributing their resources on the other end, things are happening. Let them know what those things are. Connect their contributions to the outcomes that are coming out. 9, write to start the conversation. Ask questions. Solicit advice. Appreciate feedback. And respond rapidly when you do get feedback. 10, feature images. We're image saturated. And our most viewed social media posts, second only to video, are images. Put a lot of text out there, it's ignored. Put out images, it really lights up. Making content, measure the results. Measure your website traffic. Measure participation. If it's increased, you're doing something right. Measure fundraising. Measure loyalty. It's kind of abstract. How do you measure loyalty? There are ways. Measure loyalty. Measure feedback. Good feedback, bad feedback. Measure the level of awareness that people have. Okay. Do they know what you do? What 3 words do they associate with your ministry? And are those the words that you want them to? And last, learn, adjust, appeal, and repeat. Okay. You might get the idea, and you'd be right, that I get excited about good content. And I've suggested here that good, any good that comes from your communication, isn't about your website. It's not about your newsletter. It's not about social media and how it's taking over the world. It's about content. And that effective communication, communication that's ultimately going to make a difference, that's going to push you towards your mission and push the world a little bit closer in the direction, both your audiences, your supporters, it's going to get them there. Effective content that makes a difference is going to focus on the content. Okay? We've evaluated a few principles that makes that more possible. So just regardless of what medium you decide to use, take the long view, start with content, and make a difference. Godspeed.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.